The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
I will again, as yesterday, start by bringing you warm solidarity greetings from Greek and refugee activists that are fighting for a better world in, as you know, very difficult social, economic and political conditions. I would like to tell you that a part of our hopes and optimism about the situation in the US in the post-Trump era is based on the amazing bigger or smaller resistance you have organized the latest months. And there is a significant amount of activists that are aware of this inspiring resistance, and I just wanted to tell you that. So, before I start talking about the refugee issue, and especially the Greek experience, I want to make a more general comment. When we talk about the refugee issue in Greece, we are not just commenting, we're not just analyzing things. We're not just talking about refugees as if they were an exotic type of people. We are living and fighting every day with them, with our sisters and brothers, in the camps, outside the camps, in our neighborhoods, in our schools and squads, in conditions of poverty for all. In a situation of a country where the first left government has signed a memorandum, in conditions where our lives are rapidly changing and the welfare state is collapsing. So why do I say all this? Because this situation of us living in the center of the economic crisis, in the center of the refugee crisis, you know that the majority of the people who are fleeing war pass through Greece. So in these conditions, we are forced to give concrete answers and policies regarding the refugee issue. Another thing that I would like to add is that the refugee crisis is not a crisis with the sense the media and capitalism is using the word crisis. It's not like the planet is filled with refugees out of the sudden and the West cannot deal with these big numbers. So I think we all agree in this room that when we use the word crisis, what we mean actually is a crisis that they have created with imperialistic policies forcing millions of people to leave their homes. Now, although you were aware of the numbers, I would like to remind you why exactly are we talking about the crisis that is compared with the Second World War. These are numbers that prove that only a war, only a big disaster or terroristic policies lead millions of people to leave their homes, abandon their homes, risk their lives and migrate to a strange country. So there are 22.5 million refugees in the world. This is the highest level ever recorded. 55% of them are from just three countries, Syria, Afghanistan and South Sudan. 2.9 million live in Turkey. Globally, 20 people are forced to flee their homes every minute. 21,439,000 people were drowned in the Mediterranean during the last years, the last 20 years. Also, as you know, and as I will try to explain in my talk, in Greece, we have witnessed a great and very touching solidarity movement from below. And there is a reason. It's not only the high level of political consciousness, it's also related with the culture and the history of the Greek people. And that is that what I mean is that the collective memory of refugees and immigrants is deep and alive in Greece. So, what does it sound, the word refugee in Greek? When we talk about the refugee issue, people don't only think about the people who come from Syria and Afghanistan, they also think of their Greek grandmothers and grandfathers who migrated from Minor Asia, the place we call today Turkey, 1922, who they were also considered as foreigners and dangerous. And they also think about their families who migrated in the US, Australia, etc. So the memory was the base for the great solidarity that unfolded the last year in Greece, together with the very high political consciousness, the left, most of people, the majority of people in Greece say that I belong to the left. So I think there are three things that come up as facts, conclusions and duties that we should work on. One, what's happening is not normal and we cannot get used to it. It's not something that is inevitable. The Mediterranean Sea has become the largest planetary mass grave. From 2000 to date, more than, as I said before, 20 to 30,000 people have perished in its waters. We have repeated shipwrecks that are a clear demonstration that strengthening external borders serves to contain migratory flows in the short term, causing deaths and disappearances. So it would not be too far from the truth to say that we're under a state of exception. The war isn't over when the refugees manage to arrive to the coast of Turkey, Greece or Italy. 2 months ago, there was an image that shocked us in the press, or ought to have shocked us. In Chios, in a hot spot, Chios is an island, so in a hot spot that is considered one of the worst in Europe, some journalists described it as the black hole bordering with the impossible, we saw a cage. It was a cage for humans, where the dangerous people that arrive half dead are forced to live until they take them to the camps. So my first point is that this constant war the refugees are living is a situation that we have to deal as emergency, as a picture of a very dark past, a continuous dystopia. It's a crime against humanity, dignity, it's a war, it's capitalism. And with this sense, yes, it's a crisis. My second point is the most obvious one. The refugee crisis is not a normal situation that happens because the people from Middle East or Africa live like nomads. I don't know if I say the word right, nomads, you understand. It's not a normal situation for these kind of countries. Refugees are fleeing countries such as Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Eritrea, Yemen, Libya, Mali and Sudan in order to escape from wars, from brutal dictatorial regimes, often created by foreign military interventions. And these same governments continue the war against refugees in many other ways because they really don't care for the victims of their policies. Instead, they raise walls like the ones in Calais, Hungary, Morocco, Evros in Greece. They use military forces like the Frontex, the Navy, the Harbor Police. And in this situation, we should add the fact that across the continent, xenophobic, right-wing populist parties are on the rise, while even mainstream parties are pushing policies of aggressive policing, surveillance, and militarized borders. To be more concrete, 2 weeks ago, the Ministry of Economy in Greece, the Greek of the left government, announced a new educative program by which young refugees from the age of 15 to 18 will have the great opportunity to be trained in farms in order to be useful and get the necessary skills for the labor market. So we denounced, of course, this decision, saying that this is a form of a modern slave trade. Those children should be going to school and not working in the fields. So my second point is that not only we should again and again name the roots of this situation, but we should also underline and reveal the hypocrisy of the European governments, the hypocrisy of the left government of Syriza, who do not nothing for refugees and support racist policies. The agreement of shame, that's what we call it, between Turkey and EU, is one of these terrible results. European leaders agreed in this agreement that every person arriving irregularly on Greek islands, including asylum seekers, should be returned to Turkey. And they decided and they agreed that Turkey is a safe country. My third point is, what do we do? Is there an alternative? I think that part of the answer is the magnificent solidarity movement that was developed in Europe. Spanish comrades and Andrea has a lot to say about this. The great majority of the volunteers right now in the camps come from Spain. This solidarity of the ordinary people was developed against the hysterical media voices, the propaganda, the neo-Nazi groups, the fascists, who, as you might know, have managed to enter the Greek parliament. They have 8 MPs. And a very known professor, Tsakalos, described it very well when he said, "I can say one thing. My confidence to people became greater, thanks to these people, men, women and children, who keep the dignity of the humanity under the worst conditions of life, And to these ordinary people, which a little time before asked themselves if life has any meaning during the period of memorandum, or they are a heavy load for their relatives, now they are here, tireless, insistent, inventive, generous, sharing with the victims of wars, persecution and hunger the little things they have. So, before I speak about the alternatives, I would like to describe in very brief lines the situation in Greece right now concerning the refugees issue. As you know, in Greece, or as you may know, there are less than 60,000 refugees right now. And 3,000 or 4,000 people are in the islands. After the agreement of Schengen with Turkey, all refugees arriving on ships are expelled, I mean the new refugees, are expelled, repatriated or sent to other places. And there are four types of hosting, if we can call it hosting. One, the camps on the islands that are actually like centers of concentration, that's the way we call them. Here the refugees live in inhuman conditions. Many of them have died from cold in the winter. In these camps they stay refugees who are about to be expelled back to their countries. The second type of hosting are the camps outside the cities where people live in tents. Those who manage the camps are mostly the NGOs or the host office, and they're under the control of the army. The third type of residents are the squats, the occupations of buildings in some cities, especially Athens, from solidarity groups. These are self-managed and self-financing places. The conditions there are quite good, but they cannot cover the needs of the majority of refugees, so they only work as an example of a different way of doing things. And the fourth type of hosting is some houses. The decision speaks about 20,000 people that are going to be accepted in European countries, so they put them in houses to live. We had three procedures during this time. The first phase was when the refugees arrived in Greece, the summer of 2015. It was 1 month after the memorandum, the signing of the memorandum. So there we witnessed a grassroots movement, the solidarity of a huge part of the Greek society. And it was really surprising how the poor people even offered what they didn't have to the refugees. At this point, we had thousands of volunteers in every corner of Greece. You have to keep in mind that we're after the defeat of the signing of the memorandum. So 1 month after the defeat, we have a huge solidarity movement all over Greece. Also, we have the volunteers that come from abroad. In this phase, the government cannot manage the situation, so they let us get in the camps and help the refugees. So in this first phase, the solidarity is organized and managed by solidarity people. But gradually, the NGOs absorb the majority of funding given by the UN and take control of the camps. But I would like to repeat that without the volunteers, this first period, without the medicines, the clothing, the toys, the food, the refugees would not be possible to organize their life. So we can organize to our lives. We can do that in every situation. At the same time, we have a solidarity that's not solidarity, it's charity. The institutional solidarity, the institutional charity. The philanthropy. The media, the church, the big supermarket companies, the political parties started a communicative campaign with rich and famous women and men and singers that went to the airports, gave bags with some snacks to a minority of children, producing many problems to the refugees that couldn't access these benefits. The second period begins in the fall of 2015. Is where the government replaces all volunteers and begins to organize the state. So we have most of the refugees that are settled in the camps. I said that the NGOs take full control of the reception and management. And there, in the harshest days of this winter, the situation in the camps became completely unbearable. We have revolts against these horrible conditions. We have hunger strikes of women. We also have racist attacks that were organized by the far right, and we had fascist neo-Nazis that burned camps. So that was a very, very difficult situation for us. We are totally excluded from the camps. The camps are outside the cities, so the refugees are totally isolated. And the third period begins just after the signing of the agreement with Turkey. The fate of the refugees is determined by this reactionary racist agreement between EU, Turkey and Greece. In order to oversee the implementation of the agreement, a battle fleet of NATO has established its presence in the Aegean Sea, mostly due to the insistence of the Tsipras government, and is also keeping an eye on the situation in Syria and on the Russian warships that are stationed in the Eastern Mediterranean. In that time, the army, I want to make a parenthesis here, the Minister of Defense is the president of an extreme right party, which is called ANEL, Independent Greeks. They participate in the government, so the Ministry of the Defense is led by this dangerous man. So he decides to forbid us to enter the camps. We need permission to do that. Also, I want to say that the gradually changes the way in which the media present the refugees. It's no longer the poor, but the Muslim criminals who have come here to organize their crimes, which are those who do not respect our cities and sleep in the squares, but are ungrateful with all the solidarity received, are those who occupy spaces and join forces with the anarchists, that of course is all of us. At the same time, the government takes a decision to let the children go to the Greek schools. The refugee children. That is a demand of the anti-racist and solidarity movement. But what happens is that the fascists, the neo-Nazis, start going outside the schools and they don't let the children get in. So what we do is that we organize committees and groups of people outside the schools to stop the fascists. And that was another victory of the anti-racist movement. We managed that all the children could be able to enter the schools, so the fascists didn't win. That's a good news. So, what do we do now to end my speech? First of all, in the level of public discussion and demands. What we ask is open borders. We ask hostels and guest centers within our cities, inside our cities. We want more doctors in hospitals, more teachers in school for all children. We also denounce the whole business which is developed around the camps and demand that the money of the UN goes to relieve the pain and improve the facilities, and that they do not end in the pockets of the NGOs. Of course, we fight against the war, against Islamophobia, but what is important here is to find ways to communicate with the society, to use all the good sense of the people that spontaneously share their food with the refugees, and also to say that in a country that every summer welcomes 21 million tourists, the government claims that it's hard to offer decent hospitality to 60,000 people. B, at the level of action, we try to build relations with the refugees in the camps. There are quite a few occasions when we organize overnight visits to enter the camps. These are acts of disobedience, when they don't let us in, to distribute text. We did that in order that the refugees could participate in the general strike, so we had to get in the night and give them leaflets. Especially we take care of women and children who suffer double from this situation. So far we have succeeded that some refugees gain some self-confidence to fight for their rights. What we do is that, first we demand that the camps have a democratic social control of the conditions there, and we push for the transfer of the refugees to open decent spaces of hospitality. Although we support the squads, what we have done until now is that we prefer to work outside the camps where the majority of the refugees is, and not just build a good example of 3,300 people in a city, although we support the squad. Second, we demand that refugee children be accepted with full rights in public school, and that refugees have full access to health care in public hospitals. Third, we oppose to Golden Dawn and the far-right's efforts to organize a racist backlash. I want to end with my speech with a true story, and for some insignificant one. In the 3rd of March, a boat with 68 refugees was located outside the island of Chios. Among the 68 refugees was a little boy dressed in a Batman uniform. He managed to survive from a very dangerous trip, proving that besides everything, life can win. It was the journey of his life, and his parents said that they tried to make this trip look like an adventure, so that he wouldn't be scared. Many children didn't have this luck, the luck to be alive, to grow up and have a normal life like everybody else. But these stories are part of our history, it's our people. It's when you realize that we're not talking for numbers, but for real people who have names, who have dreams. And I think that solidarity and organized fight is the only way that there will be no more deaths, no more children without a hope, never again. Thank you.
Andrea will be our next speaker. So I'll tell you at 10 minutes, and at 15, and if you go over.
Okay, this. Come on, come on over.
No, podemos compartirlo también, porque algunas personas entenderán.
Ah, vale, vale. Bueno, en primer lugar, pues muchas gracias por habernos invitado a las conferencias. Me voy a centrar en el análisis en el caso español, ya que Caterina ha dado como una visión un poco más general, y las reacciones que desde el Estado español se han dado como en tres niveles. Por un lado el gobierno, en otro la política municipal, y por último la respuesta de la sociedad civil.
So thank you very much for inviting us here today. It's a pleasure to take part. I want to concentrate my speech tonight today on the Spanish response. Caterina was speaking a little bit more broadly, but I want to speak about the response at the federal level of the Spanish government, the municipal level, and at the level of the popular movements.
Vale, pues empezando con la acción del gobierno, en líneas generales podemos decir que España no ha sido uno de los países que más esté sufriendo la crisis de los refugiados.
And of course, from the position of the Spanish state, we're not talking about Spain as one of the countries which has been the center of the refugee crisis.
Del millón largo de entradas migratorias que ha habido en Europa en el último año, solo el 0.4% se ha llevado a cabo desde la frontera sur española.
So for instance, accounting for all of the refugees that have arrived in Europe over the last few years, only 4% have arrived at the Spanish border.
0.4%,
okay. 0.04% have arrived in the Spanish border.
O sea, el dato lo que quería señalar es que es significante, ¿no? Uno de los factores fundamentales que explican este peso insignificante del Estado español en esta gran crisis de los refugiados, además de la propia dinámica geográfica de los flujos migratorios.
So I want to describe the importance of the, or the relevance, or the meaning of the Spanish state's involvement in this overall context, and specifically its geographic placement.
Ha sido la política migratoria y de asilo que durante una década el Estado español ha estado llevando a cabo. Como que este peso insignificante del Estado español, esta cifra que he dado, se explica en gran parte por la política migratoria que el Estado español ha estado llevando a cabo.
So, sorry, I want to explain the meaning of the immigration policy that the Spanish state has adopted.
Hemos visto como Europa, a través del tratado o del pacto que ha hecho con Turquía, lo que ha llevado a cabo es una externalización de la propia frontera europea, contratando unos estados guardianes para que contengan los flujos migratorios.
So, for instance, the European Union has come to an agreement with Turkey in terms of how to stop the flow of refugees and create a harder border between the refugees and the European Union.
Y esta es la misma política que España ha estado llevando desde hace una década, concretamente desde el 2007 con la llamada crisis de los cayucos.
And so, for instance, we see this Europeanization of a policy which began in the Spanish state back in 2007 with the crisis of the people from Cananaya, from the Canary Islands.
Sí, o sea, la crisis de los cayucos es como una canoa pequeña. Bueno,
from
África a Canarias.
Oh, there was a Spanish or African islands, the cayucos, in which people were immigrating in Spain in 2007.
Okay. A través de acuerdos bilaterales con países como Marruecos, Mauritania o Senegal, España ha intentado frenar el flujo de migrantes que llegan a sus costas a través de estos estados tapón.
And so back in 2007, the Spanish state attempted to come to agreements with Morocco, Mauritania, etc., to stem the flow of refugees.
Esto ha ido acompañado de sucesivas leyes de extranjería que agilizan las deportaciones de inmigrantes, instalaciones de CIEs, que son centros de internamiento de extranjeros, auténticas cárceles para los inmigrantes.
And so the Spanish state not only set up policies stopping migration, but they established centers, migration centers, which are essentially prison camps for immigrants coming into Spain.
Y la instalación de una valla en Melilla, que es una de las ciudades que se encuentra en el norte de África, que son unos 12 kilómetros de alambres y cuchillas de más de 7 metros para que los inmigrantes no puedan cruzar.
And they even established an immigration center, essentially a detention center in Africa, in Mauritania. Or in one of the islands right along the coast in Melilla, which is only 12 kilometers off the coast of Spain.
Bueno, la posición adoptada por el gobierno español ante la crisis de los refugiados en 2015 se enmarca dentro del acuerdo europeo de reubicar a 1.600 personas refugiadas en suelo europeo.
So, in 2015. The Spanish government is situating its actions within the European framework and the placement of 160,000 people.
O sea, el acuerdo lo toma Europa, que es de reubicar a 1.600 personas. A España le toca un número, que son 17.600 personas, que tiene que reubicar en suelo español hasta el 2018.
And so the Spanish state has only agreed to take, of these much larger number, only 17,000 people up until 2018.
El acuerdo España se compromete a reubicar a estas personas en 2015 y tiene un periodo hasta el 2018, pero a día de hoy, dos años después, vemos que solo se ha cumplido el 7% de este cupo.
7%. So sí. They've only, up until, from 2015 until today, they've only managed to take in 7% of this very small total.
Estas cifras resultan impactantes si las comparamos con los más de 4 millones de inmigrantes que el Estado español absorbió en la década o en los años 2000.
In the year 2000, around the year 2000, the Spanish state absorbed almost 4 million refugees.
No, or personas inmigrantes.
Immigrants, not refugees. So 4 million immigrants around the year 2000 came into Spain.
O sea, que si comparamos la cifra de 17.600 personas con los 4 millones de personas inmigrantes que España ha reabsorbido en su economía, pues para mantener el proyecto económico español que está basado en el turismo y en la construcción, vemos que son cifras irrisorias.
So back in 2000, with this enormous absorption of immigrants into the Spanish economy, centered in the construction economy and the tourism economy, it really made the Spanish economy possible for its growth over all those years. And if we compare the total of 4 million people to the very small total of just a few tens of thousands of people that are agreeing to accept now, you can see really the big difference.
Lo mismo podemos decir si extrapolamos estos datos con el caso europeo, ¿no? Vemos como en otras épocas de mayor esplendor económico y pujanza económica.
So in other periods when the Spanish economy was doing better, you could understand that they were more receptive to taking immigrants.
Sí, en otra época de mejor pujanza económica, Europa no habría pestañeado en incorporar a su fuerza de trabajo activa o de reserva apenas este millón de personas refugiadas que están clamando por entrar.
So in these periods when the economy was more dynamic, they were able to absorb millions of people in the active and the reserve army of labor in Spain.
Vale. Esto demuestra que la crisis de los refugiados no es sino la consecuencia directa de las políticas de austeridad que se han llevado a cabo en Europa.
So we can then see that the refugee crisis from the Spanish point of view is a direct result of the austerity policies that have been implemented all over Europe.
Desde un punto de vista político, estas políticas de austeridad no solo son recortes y privatizaciones.
So the austerity is not limited to budget cuts and privatization.
Sino también la imposición sobre la población europea de un imaginario estado de escasez, ¿no? De la idea de que no hay suficiente para todos.
But also the idea is being imposed in Europe of a sort of a fortress Europe in which it's Europe for the Europeans.
Y solo así podemos explicar cómo algo más de un millón de personas, cifra que en otra época habría resultado insignificante, esté generando este terremoto político.
A relatively small number. ¿Cuál es el número?
Un millón
de personas. A million people is not to blame for this massive austerity shift which is happening in Europe.
Vale. Ahora, volviendo al segundo punto de análisis, que sería la política municipal, las iniciativas llevadas a cabo en el plano municipal, que son como el gobierno de las ciudades, contrastan con la que ha llevado a cabo el gobierno central.
So now I want to talk about the municipal level, how local governments are responding to this refugee crisis, and contrast that to the federal level.
Ante la lenta reacción del gobierno con el drama de los refugiados, los municipios del cambio, las ciudades del cambio, con Barcelona a la cabeza, lanzaron la propuesta de crear una red de ciudades refugio.
So, for instance, many local cities, for instance Barcelona, are proposing a network of cities that will be called refugee welcome cities.
Okay. Esta propuesta es rápidamente asumida por muchas otras ciudades, un total de 55 ciudades se unen a esta red de ciudades refugio.
And this proposal has been taken up very quickly by cities all over Spain, including 150 cities that responded to this call by Barcelona.
Todas estas ciudades están gobernadas o bien por el Partido Socialista o por iniciativas electorales lanzadas como por Podemos.
And all of these cities are either governed by the Socialist Party or out of electoral initiatives proposed, for instance, by Podemos.
La propuesta básicamente consistía en poner los medios necesarios para que la acogida de refugiados fuese posible, dedicando pues partidas de dinero a ello, habilitando vivienda municipal.
And so, for instance, these are both welcome centers, but also more concrete reforms. The provision of welfare, of some money, of credentials in order to operate in the city.
Y sobre todo canalizando todas las iniciativas que desde la sociedad civil se estaban llevando a cabo.
And so this is part of the whole way in which civil society is responding to this.
Aunque esta iniciativa, la red de ciudades refugio, fue o es muy interesante, la realidad finalmente fue bastante diferente. ¿Sigo?
Sí.
Ah, vale. O sea, la realidad es otra, porque ante el incumplimiento del gobierno del compromiso de reubicación de estos 17.600 refugiados, al final estas ciudades terminan sin hacer nada y toda su acción queda como reducida a puro simbolismo.
So, while all of this is happening, we also have to understand that since only 17,000 refugees have been allowed in, that all of these actions are really remaining at the level of symbolism.
Okay. Esta postura, la de las ciudades del cambio, ¿no? Y la de las ciudades refugio, también ha sido muy criticada desde las organizaciones de la sociedad civil de apoyo a los refugiados, porque bajo el amparo de la inacción del gobierno han justificado su propio inmovilismo.
And so these symbolic actions have been strongly criticized by civil society because they are essentially accepting the terms set by the federal government and only taking so many symbolic actions.
Afortunadamente, la reacción de la sociedad civil ha sido bastante impactante. Como ha dicho Caterina, hemos sido el país que más voluntarios ha enviado a Grecia a ayudar en los campos.
Fortunately, now in the third level of analysis, at the civil society level of social movements, we've seen much more action, as we saw in Greece, people being willing to volunteer.
Numerosas plataformas ciudadanas de acogida se han organizado, muchas organizaciones, pequeñas ONGs se han volcado con el tema y han llevado a cabo como esa labor de asistencia, ¿no? Y ocupando como el vacío legal que han dejado, bueno, el vacío que han dejado las instituciones europeas y la española.
And so people have been responding to this call and taking actions against sort of the inaction of the government. We've seen small organizations, different people coming together, protests, speak outs, people demanding that something be done.
Pero toda esta muestra de esperanza no tiene que hacernos pensar que con la solidaridad basta.
But this is wonderful, but this solidarity isn't enough.
Para evitar permanecer en posiciones como reactivas o meramente asistencialistas, tenemos que trabajar también como en otras líneas.
So in order to not simply always be reactive, we also have to develop a political method which allows us to move on different fronts.
En primer lugar, tenemos que federar las distintas iniciativas que desde la sociedad civil están paliando el vacío que están dejando las instituciones europeas y estatales.
First of all, what we have to do is bring together or unite the various different networks of people who are organizing in order to understand that we are fighting a European-wide policy.
En segundo lugar, hay que articular estas alternativas y acciones desde la sociedad civil con las instituciones del cambio.
The second thing is that we have to articulate a program so that the local organizations can put forward demands on the cities that have claimed to stand in support of the refugees.
Pero lo que no tenemos que olvidar, y aquí reside como lo importante, es que sin la desobediencia y sin la movilización social, todo lo que se consiga avanzar y todos los derechos que conquistemos al final serán papel mojado y no podremos traducirlos como en conquistas concretas.
So we have to be able to... ¿Esto?
O sea, que no podemos olvidar.
So we can't forget that without civil disobedience and without mobilization, we aren't going to be able to go forward. The rights that we win will always be a dead letter if we can't translate them into concrete gains.
Y por último, tenemos que tener como muy claro que la lucha contra la xenofobia y contra la austeridad es la misma lucha.
And we have to understand that the struggle against xenophobia is the same struggle as the struggle against austerity.
Porque el marco de escasez que provocan los recortes y las privatizaciones constituyen la base económica de esta exclusión.
Because the framework of scarcity which provokes cutbacks and constitutes the economic base of exclusion.
Y de la idea de que como no hay suficiente para todos, pues los nacionales primero.
And because there's always this idea that there isn't enough to go around. And that's it. Gracias.
So, hello everybody. Well, before talking about Italy, I'd like to give a few elements for the discussion. Immigration must be looked at as a structural phenomenon in the framework of global capitalism. Three are the main factors. Of course, imperialist wars and regional conflicts, neocolonialism in the form of debt entrapment, which is a very important factor causing people to migrate from the countries, and of course climate change, which is increasingly a major factor affecting millions and millions of people, especially in the region of Central Africa or Eastern Africa, like Somalia, South Sudan, Nigeria. The United Nations have projected that in the next year alone, 200 million peoples are at risk of starvation because of droughts. And that has strongly affected those regions, it is impossible to understand contemporary imperialism and hence the framework within which the migration occurs without considering the globalization of production that basically transformed the countries of the global south from commodity suppliers to producers of goods and services, basically of goods. And this new international division of labor is a main feature of contemporary imperialism. And this is especially important because a key tenet for the global imperialist system today is the check on the freedom of movement. That's really important to understand. Because one is, well, usually inclined to think that the imperialist system does not care about people moving, migrating, etc. And that, but point is that without the check on the freedom of movement, the imperialist system could not impose their harsh conditions on the countries of the global south, and especially could not maintain them in a state of minority and in a state of dependence toward the countries, the imperialist countries in the north of the planet. So it is very important for capitalists and for states alike to discipline the immigration to their objectives. This is, well, of course, not everything goes smooth for them, because there are often contradictions between the capitalist and different fraction or sectors, capitalist sectors' requirements and state requirements. On the one hand, there are the needs that there is a certain inflow of immigrants in the imperialist countries, but they must be maintained in a condition of minority or even a slavish condition to check that an abundant reserve army of labor is available to lower wages and impose harsh working conditions. And on the other hand, the state must manage the inflow of migrants, considering the capitalist requirements. But on the one hand, the bourgeois political personnel is subject to a double pressure. A pressure of the deep state and the capital. It's worth noting, for example, that in Italy, the president, the chairman of the institute that is charged of arrogating pensions to retired workers, told that it's absolutely necessary that a regular inflow of immigration is guaranteed for Italy in the next years. And on the other hand, there is the pressure of the public opinion, where xenophobic, if not openly racist sentiments, unfortunately in Italy, are on the rise. And it's also worth noting that these sentiments are, you know, may be considered as, to a certain extent, irrational from the point of view of the current capital requirements. But on the other hand, political parties, which are the expression of the bourgeoisie, cannot do without have to consider that to maintain their consensus. So there is no mechanistic casualty between the different requirements and the different conditions under which the immigration take place. So revolutionary socialists basically can and must exploit this contradiction for their own politics. Regarding Italy, well, media have been trumpeting for years on end that there is a migration emergency. But, for example, from January 1st this year, only 85,000 people have come to the country. So, can this really be considered an emergency for a country of 60 million people? It's bullshit. There is no emergency at all. On one hand, there is the state is incapable of managing the inflow, and while it could, of course, guarantee full it could take many more migrants than that without any problem. But on one end, they use the rhetoric of the lack of resources for everybody, as Spanish commerce said, and this is made, but it was something that they did it on purpose. This rhetoric is made materially of budget cuts. For example, they found 5 billion euros to save a bank from collapsing this month, and they cannot find a few thousand euros to take in the refugees that need assistance and safety For example, they have increased military spending of 2% a year, which means 100,000 euros per day, following the demands, for example, among others, of the United States at a recent NATO summit, or even earlier. And then there are European rules which are absolutely inadequate to managing the phenomenon. For example, Dublin, the Dublin regulation, which imposed that the migrants are being held in the country where they first arrive in Europe. So for example, if a man or woman or children arrives in Italy first, he must stay there and they cannot freely move to wherever he or she wants to go. And that is a further check on the freedom of movement, which we must confront and contest. And then there is the rise of Islamophobia, which in Italy has been especially vicious. And that is a feature we unfortunately share with virtually any other countries in Europe, like Greece, Spain, and also the northern countries of the European Union. Differently from Greece and from Spain, there is not, unfortunately, there was not a reaction from so-called civil society that can act as a counterbalance towards the increasingly raising a xenophobic politics from the state and the bourgeois political parties. Because in Italy, we have been 10 years of harsh social crisis. Unemployment rate is 11.3%. There is a massive reduction of purchasing power. And more importantly, because this alone does not explain why there has not been a reaction from civil society, more importantly, there was a self-termination of the left. For years, the left actually was non-existent on the political spectrum, in the public opinion. Its voice could not be heard of. And so this explained the void that was filled by right, far right, but also from the center-left parties that have been increasingly exploiting the racist sentiments in the broader population to foster their politics of division of the working class and the people. For example, the Italian government recently, the former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, who is now the chairman of the Democratic Party, which is the main bourgeois party in Italy, has said, this is yesterday, so not 10 years ago, let's help them where they are, let's help them at home. Which is, of course, whatever any far-right party has been saying for 10 years, for 20 years in Italy, like the Northern League or even the neo-fascist. Let's stop the Good Samaritan attitude, that's something else he said yesterday, which equals to saying, let them die, because that's the point. If one say that, you mean that the people coming to the European Union shores, to Italian shores, must die, because that's the logic outcome of declaration like those. So there is an increasing convergence with the political discourse of the right and the far right in a polarization that is all right-wing one, because there are insufficient struggles, the left is virtually absent, and there is also another element. There is a crisis of bourgeois hegemony, where the parties of the ruling class are trying to increasingly incorporate racism in their main political discourse to try and overcome the crisis of hegemony that has been plaguing the ruling class in Italy for 25 years. So it's all the more dangerous a situation, because the polarization to the right will push over and over this, even the mainstream parties to espouse the political discourse of the far right. A few words about how the the system is organized in Italy, how does it work? It does work for migrants. Basically, there are the center of identification and expulsion, which are, you know, can be likened to small concentration camps for migrants, like in Greece, where immigrants are being held, sometimes indefinitely, with the aim of being repatriated and expelled from the country. In these centers, not even MPs sometimes are allowed to enter to check what the conditions are and the way the immigrants live and the way they are treated. Normally, when, for example, a refugee or an immigrant arrives on the Italian coast, basically on the coast of the southern regions like Sicily, Puglia, and Campania, and so on, they are relocalized to different Italian regions based on the number of inhabitants that each region has. Recently, a particularly vicious law was passed by the Italian Parliament, by the Italian government, the Minniti Orlando law, which, apart from giving the police extraordinary powers, have also affected the situation of the immigrants in the country. For example, while earlier a judge should meet in person an immigrant to decide whether he could acquire the status of refugee or not, now it is sufficient that the judge watch a recorded footage where the immigrants explain his or her reason, and then on that basis decide whether he can stay or not. For example, there are also other laws that were passed years ago in the country that link the possibility for an immigrant to stay in the country only if they have he or she has a job. Basically, since that is in the great majority of the cases impossible, a migrant that enters the country is suspended in a state cannot take citizenship because he or she does not have a work and must find a job where he or she comes in the country. So this is another way of blackmailing the immigrants and keep them in a state of minority where they can be exploited at will. We have been thinking about a few solutions that must be, that to be effective must be implemented on a European level. So also in this case, the struggle must be European-wide to be effective. So first of all, everybody who comes to the country must be granted a permit, unlimited permit to stay. So it cannot be blackmailed if they do not have a job. There must be the state must publicly manage safe sea passage to allow any migrants to safely come to the Italian shores. There must be an end to the Dublin rules that ventilate the territory where a migrant is allowed to stay to the first country where he or she arrives first. And also, the children of the migrants born in the country must be granted citizenship automatically, the so-called jus soli, which also the Italian Parliament has been discussing as of recently without so far any outcome. Fifth, we must withdraw from any military mission abroad, which is another key tenet of an effectively anti-racist policy, which have also tackled a broader situation. For example, there is no reason that Italian troops are being held to Lebanon or to any African country with a burden for public finances that could be otherwise used to guarantee full human conditions to any migrants coming to the country. And the end of the agreements with countries like Libya, because one, for example, one other thing that the Italian government has discussed is that they want to consider Libya as the southern border of the European Union. And that's especially important because if you do that, it means that migrants are not allowed even to depart the coast of Libya, where they are treated as we all can imagine, so in an inhumanly way, where they die in the desert, because that way they would be even allowed to depart the coast and around the country. That one of the propositions that the Italian government wants to make to Libyan governments and strike an agreement which must be opposed in any possible way. Fifth, the reduction, as I told, reduction of military expenses, an imposition of progressive taxation, which are elements to re-establish a universal welfare, which might be an important way to fight austerity, which is closely linked to the perception that migrants are somewhat cannot be taken in the country because there should not be there not be much for everybody, which is of course a lie. Seventh, support the self-organization of migrants within the broader framework of the workers' movement. For example, in the southern city of Caserta near Naples, there was a demonstration last month of 7,000 migrants from all regions of southern regions of Italy, and which was very important because for the first time it was not just a demonstration of solidarity by the natives, so to say, or by political activists. It was the immigrants that autonomously and independently organized themselves to assert their rights and demanding that they were given citizenship, they were given the work permits and so on. So it was especially important because this has been in years the first massive demonstration that clearly showed that there is room for further advancement in this case. And finally, the struggle against neo-fascists and the far right, which in Italy has been on the rise, fostered by mainstream media and sometimes the government. This is a key tenet of any anti-racist policies, as we are still... The growth of the far right especially, and the populist parties are especially worrying in a country like Italy. And this must be one important point of our general politics. So, to conclude, I must say that one other, general politically speaking, it is important that we can find a way to revive the left in the country, because unless a strong left is present, both on the political and the social level, a void will be filled, the political void that the left left in our country will be always filled by the right, the far right, and the populist party that has made racism one of their key tenets. And unless, and if we really mean to stop them, we need to find a way to end all sectarianism, all useless skirmishes between different political parties on the left, and find common ground to fight.
Thank you.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.